Accession number 19638, Reel 2.
Mr. Charles Jordan, Reel 2. What were your quarters like in the barrow room?
Very good, actually, other than the fact there was about 20 men per barrack room. We had the usual army bed space with a locker above the at the head of the bed, which was always very neat and tidy because of inspections. The bed was the metal bed that you pulled out the base of it to make a full length bed, comprised of three what we call biscuits, which is the equivalent of a mattress and a bolster, three blankets and two sheets, which every morning had to be folded up neatly and made into an armchair effect. We were very fortunate being out in China. Each barrack room had what we call a barrack boy, which is a Chinese employee, who we paid, each man paying approximately 50 cents Hong Kong a week for his services, which makes him quite a well-paid employee, really, because the wages out there are very, very poor. But that man, he did... he cleaned the barrack room after you'd left in the morning for your duties. He would take your dobying, which is your soiled clothing, and he'd take it out and it'd be dobied, and they'd come back the same day, washed, ironed, and ready for wear. Any little thing you wanted extra, you could ask him, and he was the man that would get it done for you quite easily. A case in point was, one time I'd won a sum of money on the regimental tombola, which is, I think, nowadays called bingo. I was a comparatively wealthy man for quite a while afterwards, in comparison with my compatriots. And I wanted a tropical suit made, which is very light. I think they call it tiger skin material. He contacted a tailor who came to the barracks. The tailor's, this is very unusual, wonderful really, how he took my measurements was with a roll of brown paper, which he stretched across my shoulders and tore a little nip in, and then my length, and the length of the jacket, and the arms. He said, all right, and went away. And I had this suit ready-made, made to measure, within 3 days. Also, I had a pair of leather brogues made. Same thing. Approached the bed, the barrack room boy. A shoemaker came, Chinese shoemaker. He did the same thing with brown paper, length of the shoe, across the top of my toes. And within 2 days, I had a pair of handmade, hand-sewn, full leather brogues at a very, very cheap price in comparison with what it would be at home. And that was one of our, how can you call it, one of our, oh dear, I can't put the word to it really. That was one of the luxuries of serving in Hong Kong in those days. And that is really barrack room life as it was.
Did you have many occasions at which you could wear this new outfit?
Yes, on your weekends, you went from Fort Stanley into Hong Kong, the city of Hong Kong. You went to the Garrison Cinema there, the Tombola Hall. You went for a drink in the hotels, Hotel Cecil. I can remember that one very well. And there were one or two local bars. But nightlife in Hong Kong in those days was very, very sparse and very... we always went to the Soldiers and Sailors Home, which is quartered near the docks. And as much as anything, to read the news of the rest of the world. The only place where you get an English-speaking newspaper, and that was an English paper, the Daily Mirror, which comprised of a large folder of the Daily Mirror made up in book form of the weekly mirrors. And that was the only news that we ever had of what was happening at home. You could get a very good meal there very cheaply, and one always, that was the first port of call when you had your weekend leave.
What sort of food would you eat?
English food, the usual eggs and bacon and chips, eggs on toast, that type of thing. I personally never went much on the going to Chinese restaurants or Indian restaurants, and I still do not like them at all. I still like my English food. But nightlife in Hong Kong in those days, I wouldn't say what it's like now, but in those days was very, very limited.
What about the local people? Did you get to meet any of the locals?
No, not really, no, because being at a station where we were cut off from the general public or the general population of Hong Kong, its city itself. Maybe the county regiments might have had more, but there was never any mixing done in that way. You had inter-regiment sports occasions. I played hockey for the regiment. We played against the Royal Scots and the Middlesex Regiment. They were the two British regiments there. And they were the only ones that really we had any sports tournaments with, because there was nobody else. The others was rather small numbers of Royal Corps Signals or Royal Engineers or the RAC, the Royal Ordnance Corps. But they weren't in great numbers, so there weren't any opposition, really. And you don't get a lot of mixing between regiments, socially. Not among the other ranks, anyhow. You might have... there was one or two cases, as there always is in the army, of disputes, if somebody had had too much to drink in the... in Hong Kong, and then tempers would flare about what regiment you're in, but very little of it, really.
What sort of alcohol would they be drinking?
I only went on what I might call a binge on one occasion, and that was at Christmas time. It didn't end very well for me, because it was the first time I'd ever been put on an army charge. I went into Hong Kong, and we went with several companions. We went round the hotels and we were drinking beer. Well, the Chinese beer is nothing like you get at home. It was called the Hong Kong Brewery, I always remember, and it was made primarily with it was chemical beer, which gave you a very bad hangover and sickness feeling. That was the only, the one and only lesson I had on drinking out there as regards the beverage. I knew I'd had enough and I decided to return to barracks because I wasn't drunk, but I was I knew it was going to be very bad. I picked up one of my battery, who was completely incapable. Being so far away from Hong Kong, we had to do taxi back to barracks and had to be in before 12 o'clock. Well, the taxi drew up about 2 minutes after 12. Under normal circumstances, I'd have got in and there would have been no repercussions. But on this occasion, the officer of the day was at the guard room. He saw me get out of the taxi, and unfortunately, he was one of my battery's officers. He saw me and said, "You're late, Jordan." And to the guard commander told him, book him, charge him, and went on his way. The guard commander apologized to me and he said, "Well, I've got to book you." So I said, "Well, what about the chap in the car, in the taxi?" I said, "You can't very well book him in, you know, as being late." I said, "Will you book him in as if he's all right?" He had a look at this chap and told me to take him to the barrack room and get him into the barracks. Unfortunately, when I was put up and charged in front of the same officer, he gave me 2 weeks confined to barracks, which meant that after your working day, you had to report to the guard room every hour and weren't allowed out of barracks for that fortnight. And that was my only charge in the whole of my service in the army, that I was ever on a charge.
Did that feel like
and
a harsh punishment?
And that cured me of the Hong Kong beer. Any drink I had after that comprised of a rum and Coke, rum Coca-Cola, or whiskey dry ginger, which was very, very cheap, because Hong Kong in those days was a duty-free port, so you get a whole bottle of whiskey for about 7 and 6 months in those days. I don't know what it is like now. So I never drunk beer from that time onwards. That was my only sort of incident in that respect.
Did your punishment seem harsh to you at the
time?
It
did, especially as that he was the officer that I was actually working under as a clerk. I thought he was very severe, and it wasn't as if I was half hour late. I only missed the deadline by about 2 minutes, which is, I thought, was rather severe. I think being the first charge, I could have had a warning, but that's the army.
What experience did you have of meeting the population of Hong Kong?
Well, servicemen never mix with the Chinese population at all. As regards my feelings or recollections of the population generally, my biggest impression was as you come into Hong Kong Harbour, you go past an area called Pak Sha Wan, This is a place where you can literally walk on sea. In other words, it is one massive anchorage of sampans, where the Chinese families live, eat, sleep, feed, do everything. And you can actually, to get to shore, you'd have to walk over dozens of sampans, stepping from one to the other to the shore. You can't miss this place because your sense of smell would tell you what you were coming into. That is one impression of harbour life, or the life of the Chinese in Hong Kong. They're very, very poorly paid, I suppose a third of the population actually live on the sea. You see the sampans coming in, rowed by the woman with one oar propelled from the rear, all times of day or night, and the odd seagoing junk would come through the harbour, loaded with different goods, Chinese goods. But there wasn't a lot of naval or tourist traffic in Hong Kong, not in those days. I won't say now, but there wasn't in those days, I think that.
Could you talk further about the Sailors and Soldiers Institute in Hong Kong, where you used to meet?
Well, this was the only place that the other ranks of the army could meet and get English food at a reasonable price, and the only place we could read English newspapers, which were sent to Hong Kong once a month. You got the monthly issue of the one I followed was the Daily Mirror, which was the most interesting paper as regards a serviceman anyhow. That was because of a certain cartoon in the paper, which was called Jane, and all the servicemen followed the episodes of Jane, and it was the only means of getting any news of what was happening in England or at home. We had no radios to really tell us what was happening as regards the war. In fact, the announcements of hostilities actually come through our commanding officers, not through any radio contact or anything like that, in the barrack rooms, that is. We had no radios in the barrack rooms themselves.
So the newspaper really wasn't informing you very much?
It didn't inform us from much. We knew of the fiasco of Europe and the retreat from Dunkirk, but only, how can I say, minutely, really, what could be put in the paper. And then, of course, as the war got worse, the papers gradually dried up. You weren't getting the papers through because the U-boat losses. So really we were cut off from any news of home for the majority of the years until we got home, in actual fact.
So you weren't aware of the Blitz?
We didn't know what was happening in the Blitz. We didn't know anything at all. We got no news whatsoever. not broadcast anyhow. I mean, I don't know what went through in Army headquarters. The other ranks weren't permitted to know that anyhow. That was one of the drawbacks of being so far away and in wartime when the naval losses and vessels were being sunk and destroyed. That was one thing that, well, we couldn't do anything about.
Do you think that your commanding officers were more enlightened?
They might have been. I have no indication. I don't know. They probably would get more news than we were. But then again, we were isolated from the main population, the main part of Hong Kong, being in at least 20 miles, 25 miles from Hong Kong City. And not going into the city very often, we wouldn't know much what was going on.
Today Hong Kong's a hustling, bustling place. How does this compare with the ambience there then when the Royal Artillery Regiment arrived?
Oh. Well, being a coastal defence battery, being stationed at Fort Stanley, which is the extremity of the island, 25 miles away, the only time we went into Hong Kong was on our weekends off duty. The rest of the time we made our own fun in the local barracks. We were very fortunate in the fact that we had an excellent beach for the troops for swimming, but there was nothing else as regards other buildings or entertainment in the camp, so that we had to travel into Hong Kong on this one road which went from Port Stanley into Hong Kong. And back when we returned to barracks.
What were the Chinese people like then? I mean, how did they dress?
Well, the dress was typical Chinese. There wasn't much European dress amongst the Chinese population that we had dealings with. They wore black sort of pantaloon trousers, women and men, very large straw hats to shield them from the sun, and that was the only thing that I can think about as regards the Chinese population.
What was the environment like where you were stationed, where your camp was?
Well, there was no startling scenery. There was it was a very hilly side, hilly country, bisected with typhoon drains. Typhoon drains are huge concrete ditches, and they're specifically there for the taking away the surplus water during the typhoon season, which Hong Kong has every year. But the very, very severe seasons are rather frightening.
You had a coastal outlook, I believe.
We had the From our gun emplacements, all you could see was sea. That was what we were there for. We were primarily there for to protect the coastline against sea landings. regards any islands or anything, that from where we were there was nothing in view.
Did you have any leave while you were there?
In the 4 years, 5 years I was in Hong Kong, stationed in Hong Kong, the only leave we got was weekend leave. You had no fortnight or anything like that. Really, you couldn't go anywhere anyhow. And our pay was so poor as well, so we didn't have any long leave, just the odd weekends.
Earlier on, you mentioned Christmas time. How would you have celebrated Christmas in Hong Kong in those years?
Well, there's only one thing to do. Hong Kong didn't have a lot of entertainment. In those days, there wasn't nightclubs and big cinemas. There was just one Garrison cinema and a Garrison hall where they had tombola, the only gambling game allowed in the army. At Christmas time, the only enjoyment we had was actually going from hotel to hotel drinking, unfortunately, which was not a good thing, especially when you had to go all the way back 25 miles to barracks.
Was the heat extreme?
Very much so. And we didn't have in those days sun cream to protect our skins. It was just common sense of the individual. Some people suffered very badly from sunburns. Others, like myself, tanned quite evenly, and I did quite a lot of swimming, so that alleviated that. But the heat was very, very bad.
Would you describe what your uniform consisted of?
Well, in the summer season, unless we were actually on a ceremonial parade or guard parade, it was just shorts, army boots, and khaki drill shirt. And that was our apparel, and that was quite enough too.
During your time there, did you receive much mail or parcels from home?
Unfortunately, I did not. I had very little mail, except for one person who is now my wife, but in those days was my pen pal. That was the majority of my personal mail, but I was just one in hundreds.